From NPR News, this is special coverage of the New Hampshire primary. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. It's former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney first, and then...
I sort of have to chuckle when they describe you and me as being dangerous.
Ron Paul in second. The Texas congressman is running some 14 points behind Romney.
Former Utah Governor John Huntsman is running third.
Handshake by handshake, conversation by conversation, vote by vote. We got it done, ladies and gentlemen.
With South Carolina and Florida later this month, Huntsman called his third place finish a ticket to ride.
Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich and former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum are dueling for fourth as New Hampshire has its say on who should challenge President Obama. This is special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block. And we're joined here in the studio by NPR's Mara Liasson to talk about the results so far from New Hampshire. Mara, we've been talking about the convincing victory by Mitt Romney and also the consolidation, the broadening of his voter base based on the exit polls and who turned out to vote, cast their vote for him today.
Well, he did get a better percentage of the vote than he got last time. He got almost as much as John McCain got in 2008 and that other nominees have won New Hampshire by. He didn't get more votes, actual votes. That might mean that the turnout was just lower. He got a higher percentage. But he did bust through that symbolic ceiling of 25%.
So which is not a place you would want to be.
Right. So he's put that behind him. He's not a 25% candidate anymore. But also he did make history, as he told his supporters. No non-incumbent has ever won Iowa and New Hampshire, and he's in a very good position to make even more history and win South Carolina and Florida. So he's has this incredible streak of victories behind him and potentially ahead of him. But the question is, has he succeeded in unifying his party, winning over the conservative base, kind of keeping enthusiasm behind him? This is something the Republican Party was supposed to have as an advantage over Democrats this cycle, that they were more enthusiastic.
Right.
They were determined to get rid of Barack Obama to defeat him. That's what Romney needs. And we don't know if he had that.
And again, if there's thinking that this is going to be a cakewalk, many of his Republican opponents would like to have something to say about that. They have been fiercely on the attack in the last few days, and that's no doubt going to continue into South Carolina and Florida.
It certainly will, but it's very hard to see how any of them has the resources and the organization to really challenge Romney. I talked to one of Romney's senior advisors today, and he said the most important primary that Romney was the primary where all the other big superstar Republicans decided not to run, the Paul Ryans and the Jeb Bushes and the Chris Christies and the Mitch Daniels. So he's been lucky. He had a weak field against him. He was the only one with a national organization and a national finance network, and it served him in good stead.
Okay, Mara, thanks so much. NPR's Mara Liasson.
Rick Santorum went to the podium at his headquarters not long ago to address his supporters, and we're going to hear a chunk of what he said to them.
We came up here just about 10 days ago. The polls were having us about 1 or 2%. After Iowa, the most recent poll was 3%. We have, depending on your math, either 10 times, 5 times, or 3 times where we started. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to respect the process here. We wanted to respect the fact that we were going to campaign in every single state, states that, you know, were good for us and states that may be a little tougher. When you're running in a state like New Hampshire that, you know, had a lot of folks here and spending a lot of time here and a lot of money, we knew it would be tough. But you know what? The message we had of going out and believing in the American people, believing that we needed to have opportunity, not just for some America, but we needed someone who was going to go out and speak for all Americans to be able to have the opportunities to rise in society. And we took that message here to New Hampshire. We took it talking about our manufacturing plan, talking about what we're going to do to grow this economy. And we took it to talk about faith and family as the bedrock of our society.
Former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, who tied Mitt Romney last week in Iowa, but tonight he polled just under 10% of the voter. That's what he has so far. He is locked in a tie for fourth, it seems, right now with Newt Gingrich. Mara Liasson, Rick Santorum, what does his future look like right now?
Well, Rick Santorum had a real surge out of Iowa. He made a strategic decision not to just kind of touch down and do a perfunctory visit in New Hampshire to say he was competing here and then hightail it to South Carolina, where he has potentially a much stronger base of support. He decided to stay in New Hampshire, as he said, respect the process. He did one town meeting after another. He engaged with voters, went to all the diners. He campaigned the New Hampshire way, and he came up very short. I think that he has an argument can be made that he squandered some of that surge that he had coming out of Iowa. I don't know how that's going to hamper him in South Carolina. Up until now, he's been polling second there. He's been looking pretty strong.
But this wasn't a great fit for him. This is the fiscally conservative state with a strong streak of libertarianism. That's just not his, that's not his strong suit.
Well, that's what it looks like, because he is a culture warrior and he is a social conservative. On the other hand, I think the way he looked at it was, I'm from the Northeast. I won in Pennsylvania. Why can't I compete in New Hampshire? I have a message on manufacturing. New Hampshire has, seen manufacturing wither. I think he wanted to give it a try, and it didn't work.
It's NPR's Mara Liasson, and this is NPR's special coverage of the New Hampshire primary, special coverage from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the New Hampshire primary. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Victory for Mitt Romney tonight by a wide margin.
Thank you. Thank you, New Hampshire. Tonight we made history.
Mitt Romney there saying he made history by becoming the only non-incumbent Republican presidential candidate to win both the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary. Coming in second was Ron Paul. Third place went to John Huntsman, who sounded happy with the outcome.
And here we sit tonight, ladies and gentlemen, with a ticket to ride and to move on. Here we go to South Carolina. Thank you all so very much.
Well, joining us now from New Hampshire is Representative Frank Ginta. He's the congressman, Republican congressman from the 1st District of New Hampshire. He's in Manchester. He did not endorse a candidate prior to the primary. So, Congressman Ginta, here's your chance. I'll give you a national platform right now.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on. And the role I wanted to take is an ambassador of the New Hampshire primary. First in the nation status.
We've heard about that.
Important thing for us to do, and I'm very pleased with the outcome. And as I have said in the past, I will absolutely support our party's nominee when it comes to November.
Well, do you support Mitt Romney now?
Well, I'm going to let the process unfold. Now it moves on to South Carolina. I think he's in a very strong position, as most people in New Hampshire suspected going into today's primary here in the Granite State. But I'll let the process unfold, and you know, when the party, if the party decides to nominate Mitt Romney, I'll certainly be behind him 100%.
But your reluctance seems noteworthy here. The process has unfolded in your state, and you decided to pass on it. Why? You had a choice there among several candidates.
Sure. Well, I looked at all the candidates. I wanted to go into this past weekend, two very important debates, and see, you know, how these candidates would compete in New Hampshire. Remember that we had many national debates which had a bit of a national approach to the campaign. Mm-hmm. I prefer to see these candidates come to New Hampshire, do retail politicking far earlier than they typically did. So I wanted to give it one last look and decided after speaking with my wife that, you know, we would continue to play the role of ambassador. Mm-hmm. We'll let South Carolina play itself out in this primary process.
Well, let me ask you about one other candidate, Ron Paul. Is he an important and a positive factor in the Republican Party right now?
Well, he certainly has a voice in the Republican Party. He has been a longtime member of Congress. He does have a libertarian group of support in New Hampshire and other parts of the country. But I think there are clear differences between most of the Republicans and Ron Paul. I serve with him. I know Ron Paul to a certain extent. And I appreciate the perspective that he has relative to domestic and foreign relations issues, but I think they're a little bit different than what the traditional Republican primary voter wants to support.
Okay, Representative. I'll still call you Representative Ginta as opposed to Ambassador, but I understand the less formal role that you're playing now.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay, that's Frank Ginta, Republican Congressman from New Hampshire.
And we're going to hear now from Newt Gingrich's speech to his supporters in New Hampshire. Newt Gingrich at this point looks to be coming in fourth, possibly fifth, battling for that spot with Rick Santorum. He told his supporters in New Hampshire that he was looking forward to South Carolina. He urged his backers to do the same.
I'm asking each of you not to slow down. In the next couple of days, make a list of every person you know in South Carolina and every person you know in Florida, because those are the next two great contests. And I believe as we get to South Carolina, as the choice becomes clear, as people understand that there is a bold Reagan conservative approach of lower taxes, less regulations, more American energy, a sound dollar, and actually being in favor of creating jobs, the opposite of the Obama program of higher taxes, more regulation, less American energy, and attacking the people who create jobs. Look at those two models. I believe we can reach out and we can create a majority that will shock the country and a majority that will begin to put us back in the right track. It is doable. It is a daunting challenge, but consider the alternative. If we do not go the extra mile, and we do not offer a vision powerful enough to unify Americans, and we continue down the road that Obama has us on, but more than Obama, the bureaucracy has us on, the judges have us on, the entire pattern of how Washington operates has us on. More years of decay, more years of inadequacy, more years of falling behind, more years of growing weakness. That's the alternative.
That was Newt Gingrich addressing his supporters in New Hampshire tonight. A rather dejected, dispirited possibly Newt Gingrich there, Robert?
Mm-hmm. It didn't sound very buoyant. He's come in with about 10% of the vote, and that places he's not in the pack at the bottom as he'd forecast. He's down with Rick Santorum toward the bottom, and John Huntsman with 16.7% of the vote right now is well ahead of those two. So he obviously had hoped for more.
Yeah, pulling at about 10, just under 10% so far in New Hampshire.
Yeah. And two-thirds of the precincts have reported so far. Tovia Smith, NPR's Tovia Smith, is at Huntsman headquarters, where they already heard from their candidate who's placing third. He has declared that giving him a ticket to ride onto South Carolina and presumably Florida.
Right. That's the rock and roller in him.
That's the rock and roller in him. From what it sounds like, people seem to be having a good party there. Are they happy with this result?
They are. Let's say it's not dejected, as you just described Newt Gingrich, but it's emotional. It was a bit of a roller coaster here the last couple of days for supporters. They felt the surge. They got their hopes up. They're definitely happy he did as well as he did, that he struck a chord last weekend with his country first message. That, of course, after Romney attacked him for serving as ambassador for a Democratic administration. Huntsman was definitely on his way up. I can't tell you how many people who said they were voting for him today said that they only decided on him, even only first considered him in the past couple days. But he needed more time. 17% is great, considering that he was at like, or nearly 17, considering that he was at like 7% a few days ago. But on the other hand, he staked it all on New Hampshire, spent all his time here. There's definitely no friendlier ground among the earlier states, and many here are disappointed.
But, Tovia, there are polls in South Carolina that show he's somewhere around, you know, just roughly 1% in the polls there. And he's got a steeper climb there if he's going to go there.
Indeed. And you heard the campaign say we're going on. You heard him not once but twice say he's got the ticket to ride. But I spoke to supporters mm-hmm. here, too. Not Johnny-come-latelys, real committed folks who were with Huntsman from the start. And they say they worry, you know, what he'll face when he gets there, if he goes, and whether he really will. One guy said to me, you know, look at Michelle Bachmann. After Iowa, she was saying, on to New Hampshire. And then the next morning, she called a press conference, and she was gone.
Okay. So we'll remember to tune in tomorrow morning, is what you're saying. Okay. Thank you for reminding us, Tovia, that tomorrow morning you can get analysis of the caucus results and the latest news in a special podcast. Just visit NPR.org. Thank you, Tovia. Melissa?
And let's go once more to NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson. And the mention of Michelle Bachmann there reminds me that we might just recap a little bit of the narrative of this campaign so far, which has been pretty wacky, if you think about the series of frontrunners who have come and gone in very quick succession. And we've ended up pretty much where we started, with a frontrunner in Mitt Romney.
There has been a lot of weirdness in the race, but when you look underneath that, it's been a very conventional Republican race. In other words, there was a front runner, there was an establishment candidate, he had money, endorsements, and organization, he laid the groundwork carefully and methodically. You had a bunch of candidates. Nowadays, you can run for president without even running for president. Sometimes we thought some of the candidates were running for higher speech fees or book contracts or a TV show. We weren't sure.
And there were people who were getting attention who weren't even in the race,
yes,
like Donald Trump.
Yes. But underneath it all, there was an effort to get a conservative alternative to the establishment candidate. It still hasn't happened. And that's a kind of standard form and dynamic. But in the end, the guy who had done all of the traditional things and run a national campaign came out ahead. None of the other candidates did that. The only other candidate who was capable of doing that was Rick Perry. And I think that was the other, when the book on this campaign is written, the moment when Rick Perry came out of the gate in first place and fell on his face, was the most significant moment for Mitt Romney. Before that, the other significant moment was when all those other big Republican superstars decided not to run at all. but those were the two important things. And now the race looks pretty conventional. And I think South Carolina, which generally goes with the establishment candidate, picks the person who's going to be the nominee. They now have received two big messages about who that person should be. And I think that, you're going to see them fall in line, as Bill Clinton used to say, if not fall in love with Mitt Romney.
Okay, Mara, thanks so much. That's NPR's Mara Liasson. And we're turning now to an economic advisor to Mitt Romney. That's Senator Jim Talent, the former senator from Missouri. Before that, a former congressman from Missouri. Senator Talent, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Melissa. It's good to be here.
When we just heard Mara Liasson say Republicans now will fall in line, if not fall in love with Mitt Romney, does that strike you as an apt description?
Well, to some extent, I like these, as a supporter of Governor Romney, I like these exit polls and other data that indicates he's actually running very well in New Hampshire among conservatives. But, I mean, one of his good qualities, I think, is he can pull the party together, and that means you're pulling both the people who really like you and the people who maybe like somebody else but, you know, can accept you and can get behind you. And I think Governor Romney is the person who can do that.
Curious, as somebody who served in the Congress under Speaker Newt Gingrich, he has come out full force against Mitt Romney with some attacks in the last week or so. Your take on those attacks and the candidacy of the former Speaker of the House?
Well, I agree with those who are saying it's less of an attack on Romney than really an attack on the way the free market system operates. And, as a Republican, I just say, we've got a candidate who's doing that in President Obama. We don't need a Republican who's going to do that. I think tonight was a pretty decisive rejection of that kind of politics in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire, but obviously the campaign goes forward to more conservative territory. Do you think those arguments might have more bite in South Carolina and then in Florida?
Well, in the Romney campaign, we're not taking anything for granted, particularly with a system where we have this proportionate, representation. This could go on a while. But no, I don't think that kind of an attack is going to work. I just think that, Republicans understand that it's important to support the free enterprise system and small business, and that Governor Romney's a guy who understands how jobs are created and did an excellent job doing that at Bain Capital.
Okay. Senator Talent, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
That's the former Missouri Senator Jim Talent. He's an economic advisor to Mitt Romney, who has come in first in the New Hampshire primary, as expected. Ron Paul coming in second, and John Huntsman, former governor of Utah, in third. You're listening to special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News.
Thank you.
From NPR News, this is live coverage of the New Hampshire primary. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. To review where we stand, he was expected to win, and he did. Mitt Romney has taken the New Hampshire primary. Ron Paul has won second place. As he said tonight, we're well on our way.
It's no longer that irate, tireless minority that is stirring up the troops. Now that irate minority, and so tireless as you have been, it's growing by leaps and bounds. It's going to continue to grow by leaps and bounds, and we will restore freedom to this country. Thank you very much.
Ron Paul, the second place finisher, and John Huntsman has come in third in New Hampshire.
And we are going now to Rick Santorum headquarters in Manchester and to NPR's Don Gagne. Don, what was the message when Rick Santorum addressed his supporters in New Hampshire tonight?
Well, it wasn't game on,
yeah.
Which is what it was a week ago in Iowa. In fact, it was a very subdued speech, at least at the start. We know why. He's battling for fifth place right now with Newt Gingrich, both at about 10%. Instead of game on, he said, we came to New Hampshire because it was part of the process. Not exactly a rallying cry. But then he did very graciously congratulate Governor Romney and say it is on to South Carolina. The crowd here very disappointed. You may recall that in that Iowa speech 1 week ago tonight, he said that it's not just a message for Iowa, his particular message. He said it would play in New Hampshire. Clearly he was wrong. They say they were outspent. They say it was unfortunate that Newt Gingrich got the union leader endorsement instead of them. He worked it hard. He had a chance to get his message out. He had plenty of media following him around. But again, certainly a very disappointing showing for them.
Yeah. And that union leader endorsement didn't seem to have helped Newt Gingrich a whole lot. In fact, Ron Paul was saying he was glad he didn't get that endorsement, I think. Or was it Mitt Romney? I can't remember.
Well, there it is, yes.
So Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich, at this point, vying for fourth place in New Hampshire. Don Gagne, thank you so much.
All right, on to South Carolina here,
too. On to South Carolina.
And joining us now is Democratic National Committee Chair and U.S. Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida. Welcome to the program once again.
Thank you.
You're the loyal opposition here tonight once again. And it looks like the Republicans, for the first time, have a non-incumbent candidate who's won in both Iowa and in New Hampshire. And this may not be the long, drawn-out internecine fight that might benefit the Democrats. Is Mitt Romney a formidable candidate for an opponent for President Obama, or does he have obvious weaknesses to you?
Well, I think there are pretty clear obvious weaknesses, as evidenced by the lackluster turnout that there was today in New Hampshire. It appears as though the Republican turnout is off by about 40% compared to the number of voters that came out in the same primary 4 years ago. And that's because there's not a lot of great reasons to get excited about this field, particularly Mitt Romney, who lacks any conviction, is willing to say or do anything to get elected, and whose economic experience that he's touting is one of dismantling companies and shipping jobs overseas and cutting pension and health care benefits. That's not the kind of experience I think voters are looking for or that they'd be excited about.
Let me just say here, so far they've counted 162,000 Republican votes at 71% of the precincts reporting. 4 years ago, there were 239,000. You expect as few as 200,000 to 220,000 people voting?
Well, the numbers are pretty far off from the turnout that there was 4 years ago.
Well, we'll see if that adds up. What do you make of the responses to Newt Gingrich's attack on Governor Romney's record at Bain Capital? Does it show that Romney is vulnerable or that people actually see that as class warfare and they don't like it?
No, I think Mitt Romney is clearly vulnerable on his experience because he's running as someone who has private sector experience that understands the economy. And when faced with closer scrutiny, it's very clear that Mitt Romney's experience is not of lifting people up or of creating jobs. In fact, his claims of creating 100,000 jobs at Bain Capital have been fact-checked and proven to be incorrect and unsubstantiated. I mean, at the end of the day, people want a president who is going to stand up and fight for them and help everybody have an opportunity to be successful.
But I just want you, Congresswoman Schultz, to give me a very, very quick response to this very quick statement of Mitt Romney's tonight. He said, the president has run out of ideas, now he's running out of excuses. What's an equally terse statement that you can make on behalf of President Obama?
We don't need someone who has spent their career decimating people's jobs. We need someone like President Obama, who's fighting for the middle class and working families, giving everyone an opportunity to succeed in America, not just the wealthiest and most fortunate.
Okay, not quite as terse, but thank you very much, just the same. Thanks
thank
for talking
you.
With us. That's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat of Florida, Congresswoman, and Democratic National Committee Chair.
Let's turn back now to E.J. Dionne with the Washington Post, Matt Continetti, contributing editor with the Weekly Standard. And let's bring NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving, into the conversation, too, with this question, responding to what we just heard from Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's saying Mitt Romney is clearly vulnerable, has obvious weaknesses, and that the Democrats can exploit that going into November. Matt Continetti, what do you think?
Well, I think up to a point she's right. I mean, it's never easy to unseat an incumbent, especially since we're beginning to see, I believe, a turnaround in the economic situation. But I would say, you know, Congressman Wasserman Schultz laid out the Democratic campaign, and the core of it is 2 points. Romney lacks conviction. And then this business experience is actually a liability. Well, there's one thing that just a few weeks ago we would have expected her to say, which was that, you know, the Republicans were nominating someone too extreme, too out of the mainstream. And they would have done that had the nominee, and of course the nomination isn't sewn up yet, but assuming it is Romney, if it were anyone else, the Democrats would lead with, this person is out of the mainstream and too extreme. They can't make that argument against Mitt Romney, which I think is what's going to help him in the general election.
E.J., briefly?
I think that the Republicans have had a primary so far that wasn't very good for them. You had 6 months of the circus, which, as Mara suggested, may have turned out to be totally irrelevant to the final result, but it didn't make the party look good. Mitt Romney was pushed farther to the right than he wanted to be. And so I think those are the two things Democrats look at. And you didn't see big crowds out there. And whatever the turnout was, it does not look like it was the turnout the last time.
And Ron Elving, the last word to you.
I'm reminded of something that happened back in 1988 when a candidate named Al Gore brought up an issue about a guy named Willie Horton who'd been let out of jail by Mike Dukakis, who was the front runner in the Democratic Party, who won this primary here in New Hampshire. That issue did not get much traction in the Democratic primaries, but it came back in the fall. And it was used to absolutely hobble, in fact, kneecap Mike Dukakis in the fall campaign. And it was a symbol of why he could not get elected president in 1988. I wonder if Bain Capital could be in that category.
The Willie Horton of this campaign. Ron Elving, E.J. Dionne, and Matt Continetti, thank you so much. You're listening to special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the New Hampshire primary. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel.
We made history.
And we're nibbling at his heels.
Third place is a ticket to ride, ladies and gentlemen.
Romney, Paul, Huntsman, 1, 2, 3.
Where the Republican race heads next, coming up on special coverage from NPR News. And we're joined once again here in the studio by NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson. Mara, let's pick up on a theme that our senior Washington editor, Ron Elving, was just raising. He was wondering whether Mitt Romney's tenure at Bain Capital becomes, in effect, the Willie Horton of the general election campaign, something that was raised in the primary that came back in the general election. Does that become a potent issue against Mitt Romney? Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's similar. I mean, the Democrats are planning to use this regardless of whether Newt Gingrich brought it up in the primary. But I do think it reminds me a little bit of John Kerry. John Kerry famously came to the convention in Boston and said, "I'm reporting for duty." And he felt that his military record as a Vietnam veteran was going to be one of his strongest suits in the election. And the Republicans took aim right at his strong point. And they decimated him on that. Mitt Romney has made the central argument of his campaign that he's a businessman, he knows how the economy works, he's created jobs, and he knows how to turn around companies and therefore the American economy. I think that Democrats are going to take aim at that strength. So it's very similar. And I think that Bain Capital is going to be an issue, not just that he laid off people. That's what Ted Kennedy used against him in 1994. It's going to be much more nuanced, and Newt Gingrich has really laid out what it's going to be. It's going to be that he, even when companies failed, Romney and his investors did fine. And that's the analogy to the Wall Street crisis. That's the difference about making that argument this time. People have seen these big banks lose, but the taxpayers were on the hook. The bankers walked off scot-free with their billion-dollar bonuses intact. Somehow the system is rigged, and the kind of capitalism that Romney practiced at Bain was a rigged, unfair capitalism. So I think you're going to hear that. You heard one of Romney's supporters tonight, Charlie Bass, say, "Fat chance" to the question, to the suggestion of Gingrich's that Romney would have to stand up and have a long press conference and explain and justify all of his Bain deals. But he also said this is good to get it all out now. Hopefully, by the time the Democrats get around to it, it'll be old and worn out. I doubt that will happen.
And listen to what Rick Perry had to say in South Carolina about this, talking about Bain Capital and companies like it. "I will suggest they're just vultures," he said, "sitting out there on the tree limb waiting for a company to get sick, and then they swoop in, they eat the carcass, they leave with that, and they leave the skeleton." Robert?
Let's turn now to Mitt Romney headquarters and to NPR's Ari Shapiro, who's been covering the events there. The governor obviously spoke quite a while ago.
Yeah.
What about all this? I mean, they are obviously, they want to nominate someone who wasn't just a businessman. He's in the financial sector. He was a venture capitalist. And
his argument is that gives him the skills to fix the problems, that he knows how it works, and that this is a president who didn't have the experience coming in. Romney's a guy who knows how to fix these things. That's the case he makes anyway. The Obama folks and the other Republicans are saying he's exactly part of the problem.
Well, when he was campaigning, when you watched him, did Governor Romney often cite Staples or the other specific companies that they invested in?
All the time. Yeah. I mean, he talks about the amount that the federal government invested in Solyndra and contrasts that with the amount that he invested in Staples when he helped start up that company. You know, the founder of Staples is a big Romney supporter. I would not be surprised if he shows up on the campaign trail more as these things go forward. And he talks about the number of jobs total that Staples has created over the years. He says that Bain Capital created something like 100,000 jobs. His opponents argue that it was not necessarily a net gain when you factor in the gains and losses. The campaign has not made the raw data available, so at the end of the day, that's something that's kind of impossible to fact check with any real level of accuracy.
And what kind of a sense do you get of the attitude toward Newt Gingrich or the remark from Rick Perry? All's fair in love and war in politics, or some real bitterness toward the governor's Republican rivals?
Tonight in Romney's victory speech, it sounded to me like he was saying, "Knock it off, guys." Mm-hmm. He said, "We've seen desperate Republicans join forces with President Obama." And then this is a quote. He said, "This is such a mistake for our party and for our nation. The country already has a leader who divides us with the bitter politics of envy." From having talked to people on both sides of the aisle, I can say Democrats see a lot of value in the attacks coming from Gingrich, Perry, etc. And, you know, we'll see ultimately whether they do weaken Romney significantly.
Okay, that's NPR's Ari Shapiro speaking to us from Manchester, New Hampshire, where he's at the now quiet Mitt Romney headquarters on this evening of the New Hampshire primary. Romney, with 3/4 of the precincts reported, is running with about 38% of the vote, over 65,000 votes, well ahead of the second-place finisher Ron Paul. This is special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is live coverage of the New Hampshire primary. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. We're bringing you reports from New Hampshire, where the winner is Mitt Romney. In his victory speech, he drew stark distinctions between himself and President Obama.
Now, the path I lay out is not one paved with ever-increasing government checks and cradle-to-grave assurances that government will always be the solution. If this election is a bidding war for those who can promise the most benefits, then I'm not your president. You already have that president.
And Ron Paul, the second-place finisher, also spoke tonight of his vision of government.
Overall, you have to ask once again, as our founders did, what should the role of government be in a free society? The role should be very simple, the protection of liberty.
Big cheers there for liberty from Ron Paul's headquarters. And we're joined from headquarters of Ron Paul by NPR's Robert Smith in Manchester. Robert, what were the other big cheer lines, big applause lines from Ron Paul supporters tonight as he spoke?
Oh, what wasn't a big cheer line? Yeah, every time he mentions the Constitution, that's pretty much the go-to line. Liberty, that's a big go-to line for him. I mean, listen. These people are so hardcore. You know, Mauro talked a little earlier about enthusiasm. There is no shortage of enthusiasm for Ron Paul supporters. But, you know, I mean, I guess the question is, like, is this the perfect place for Ron Paul? Is there any other place in the nation that can show this kind of support for Ron Paul? It seems unlikely. New Hampshire is the libertarian paradise here.
And it's interesting, if we look at the returns tonight and if these numbers hold, the polls leading up to the vote in New Hampshire undercounted. They didn't think that Ron Paul would be doing quite as well as he's done tonight. If he's getting about 23% of the vote, they showed him recently coming in maybe 17 or 18%. So he outperformed expectations, you would say.
Oh, these people show up. And, you know, it's interesting looking at the data from the exit polls. I mean, Ron Paul won independents. He won young people under 30. And he won people who were first-time voters in a primary. And those are the people who showed up. This was a big independent election. And you know, he murdered his competition in that. This is his home audience. But of course, in other states and other primaries, they don't let independents vote. It's just Republicans. And so, you know, can he turn this sort of appeal to young people into turnouts in other places? You know, who knows? But this was definitely his moment.
And Robert, we just heard from Ari Shapiro at a really quiet Mitt Romney headquarters. It sounds like the Ron Paul folks are still sticking around. They're still having a good time.
Open bar, lots of folks here. I see at least three tricorn hats, lots of beards, lots of tattoos. This is a very, very interesting crowd that Ron Paul turns out. And you know, if anyone tries to do a demographic analysis, I don't know. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I met a lesbian postal worker. I met an evangelist, a Serbian baker, a pharmaceutical engineer. It's an interesting crowd, wild assortment.
Interesting. Thank you so much. NPR's Robert Smith at Ron Paul headquarters in New Hampshire.
And with us in the studio here in Washington now is Michael Dimmock, Associate Director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. Michael, you've been looking all night at the exit polls. What do they show you?
Well, obviously, Romney had a good night, and I think we know why. It was the makeup of the electorate, a bit more moderate, a bit more independent, and obviously his home turf. I think there were a couple of interesting things that I saw in there that I think speak to some of the strengths of his campaign. One, the majority of Romney supporters say they were contacted by his campaign to get him to the polls. It's clear that ground game strength of his showed up here. It got people out more so than probably most of the other candidates. And he also held his own among the late deciders. It's clear that within the last 3 days, he had a rough patch. And both Huntsman and Santorum did better among the folks who decided late than the folks who decided early. But for every person that voted for Santorum or Huntsman in the late days, there was another one who decided late to go with Mitt Romney. And so it's not like he only had the base he came in with. He was still picking up votes right up until
very
the end.
Very broad victory, yeah, that he achieved here. I'm surprised by the numbers of how many people say they were contacted by the candidate's campaign. They're only in the 50%. The lore in New Hampshire is that everybody's phone is ringing off the hook constantly. And if they didn't talk to the campaign,
ringing,
it's only because they didn't. Yeah, the doorbell is ringing instead, or they didn't pick up the phone because they were tired of getting called. I thought everybody gets called many times in New Hampshire. In any case, that tells you that there's no weakness revealed here in Mitt Romney tonight.
Right. And I think the weakness is whether this is an electorate that's representative of the future states he's going to face. And not only in that there were fewer evangelical voters in New Hampshire than most other GOP electorates or more independents participating, but that the evangelicals in New Hampshire aren't quite the same as the evangelicals in South Carolina and other states. They're not quite the strong conservatives here aren't quite the same as the strong conservatives he'll face in South Carolina and other states. They're more fiscally conservative, less socially conservative. They're looking for different traits and strengths in the candidates. So not everything that he did here will carry on, but he certainly picks up more momentum out of this. And there's always a constituent of voters who just want to see a conclusion to this. And that may be a factor in the coming races.
Just, Michael, a corrected impression that I may have given and that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Democratic congressman, certainly gave. From the numbers as I see them, with more than three-quarters of the precincts reporting and Mitt Romney having over 68,000 votes, it would seem if the numbers of votes are proportional to the numbers of precincts, he could pull in the high 80s, right where John McCain was 4 years ago. And since he, like McCain, is polling, he's polling 38.5%, McCain polled 37%. In that case, this would be a turnout just slightly less than 4 years ago, mm-hmm. or very close to what it was 4 years ago. So for Romney, a very similar showing. Better than he had 4 years ago and very similar to what John McCain had 4 years ago.
And it's not clear how much turnout in these primaries is a testament to how much enthusiasm there will be this fall, but it's certainly one of the tea leaves we're all looking at. I mean, how engaged will Republicans be through the course of this cycle, and particularly if Romney is the nominee? And the one thing you see is that the supporters of the other candidates still aren't really thrilled with Romney. They're still not really thrilled with the quality of the choices that they have. The national poll that we did just this weekend finds no increase in satisfaction among Republican voters nationwide in the quality of the field that they have. By contrast, 4 years ago, by the time we got this far, Republicans were feeling pretty good about their choices, pretty good about where the party was headed. So there's definitely a lack mm-hmm. of enthusiasm to this stage. How that will play out is something we're really looking at.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It's Michael Dimmick of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. You can find updates from the campaign trail throughout the night on our It's All Politics blog. That's at npr.org. And we've heard a lot about what happens next in South Carolina. That is where Texas Governor Rick Perry is, and our reporter Ben Philpott of member station KUT is traveling with the Perry campaign. Ben, it would seem to me that Governor Perry might have preferred a more ambiguous result coming out of New Hampshire than what we've seen.
Well, you know, I talked to some people down here, a couple of political scientists at South Carolina University, and they actually said that they expected kind of what happened in New Hampshire to stay in New Hampshire. In other words, it wouldn't necessarily affect him down here, but obviously, yes, he would like more than the 500 or so votes he got tonight.
Just one question, Ben. Does the governor stand by his characterization of Bain Capital and Mitt Romney as being vultures who swoop down on companies and cost people their jobs?
Yes, vulture capitalists. Yes, he absolutely does. He actually was just on another news network about 30 minutes ago, once again standing by that, defending what he said. And, you know, I was at a campaign event today with him, and, you know, he talks about those towns in South Carolina where the businesses were shut down, and, you know, people in the room started nodding their head and you know, not being happy about it. You know, in this economy, mm-hmm. you don't like to talk about jobs being lost.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ben. Ben Philpott, reporter from member station KUT Austin, who is with the Perry campaign in South Carolina.
And staying now in South Carolina, we're joined by Congressman Tim Scott, who represents South Carolina's 1st Congressional District. He has not endorsed a candidate. Congressman Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you this evening.
Curious to have you respond to what we were just hearing about that message in South Carolina, Rick Perry and others hammering home the notion that Mitt Romney in Bain Capital was a job killer, and there were examples in your home state of places that Bain Capital took over and those jobs went away. Do you think that's a message that resonates with voters in your state?
I certainly think that the narrative of fear is a very important ingredient in politics. I'm not quite sure that the narrative of making a profit is a evil thing overall will resonate as well. So you've got a mixed bag there of messaging happening. But certainly it's going to have traction in some parts of the state, but it will also probably be a repellent in other parts of the state. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation. a conversation piece going forward for the next 11 days.
What about the social conservative vote, the evangelical vote that is quite strong in your state? Do you see that as a voting group that can rally behind Mitt Romney? Some have expressed a concern about, for example, his Mormonism and his positions as governor of Massachusetts.
Yeah, this is a very important election process, election cycle. I think what you'll see this year versus 4 years ago is a couple things. Number one, I think our state is a very open-minded state. We're looking for someone, a candidate that matches our value system. And I think Mitt Romney, Santorum, Perry, and many of the candidates, Gingrich, will all do well based on different facets of our state. The real question is the divide, the question of divide. Will the Santorum and Gingrich and Perry split the social conservative base so much that actually helps Romney? That's probably the question that we're looking for an answer to.
And do you expect that you'll be moving any closer toward endorsing a candidate before the South Carolina primary on the 21st?
I tell you what, it certainly would be helpful to some of my constituents, and it would get some pressure off of me. I am on Saturday having a town hall forum with four or five of the candidates, so I will at least be on the sidelines until after Saturday, but I am hopeful that I'll see and hear enough on Saturday to create a tipping point and put me in someone's camp.
You haven't heard enough already?
I've heard a lot already, that's for sure. I think the question is, have I heard enough to make a decision? And at this point, I'm still, like many voters, 48% of voters in South Carolina say they're still willing to change their mind.
Okay.
Which is an interesting concept.
All right. Congressman Tim Scott of South Carolina, thank you so much.
Have a great night. Thank you.
You too.
And now back to Manchester, New Hampshire, and NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. We heard Congressman Scott raising that concern about whether the party will be divided as a result of what's happening now. Obviously, primaries divide the party. People vote against other Republicans in a Republican primary. Does this strike you as any more fractious than the Republican field typically is?
Not necessarily. If you look at South Carolina in 2008, John McCain came in as the front runner. Everyone ran against him. They split up all of the non-John McCain votes. And John McCain got fewer votes in 2008 in South Carolina than he had in that state in 2000 when he lost badly to George W. Bush. But when it was just a two-man race, John McCain's vote total wasn't enough. When he was running against that whole big field of detractors, it was enough, and he won South Carolina's votes in their delegates to the convention, and that really was the gateway to his being nominated. Something very much like that could be in the offing in South Carolina on January 21st.
And we should just note that one thing that's been made it possible for candidates to stay in quite a bit has been all the debates. If you can show up for the debate, why drop out?
Why drop out? 14, 15 debates. They've done good things for some of these candidates' careers, at least some of them. And in the long run, it's probably still a winner for them.
It's Ron Elving for NPR, and this is special coverage of New Hampshire from NPR News.
Thank you.
This is live coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. To recap the results in the first-in-the-nation primary, with the vast majority of the precincts reporting, Mitt Romney is the clear winner. Second place goes to Ron Paul, and third to John Huntsman. Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum are battling for fourth, and Rick Perry, who skipped campaigning in New Hampshire this week, is barely registering in the vote totals.
And we're going now to Columbia, South Carolina, and to Chad Connolly, who's the chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party. Mr. Connolly, welcome to the program.
Hey, Melissa, how are you doing tonight? I'm glad to be here.
Glad you're with us. Let me ask you this. I was in South Carolina not too long ago and talking to Republican voters. The name Mitt Romney was not the first name on anyone's lips at the time. Do you think that's changed?
Well, I think it's changed just in the fact that he's got a head of steam coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire for sure, and there's no doubt about it. He's built some name recognition here over the last several years, having run before, but also there's some campaigns that have been working the grassroots really hard. I think you're going to see a big surprise out of Team Santorum and Gingrich and Perry. They've got excellent teams and really good ground games at work here.
What about the message from, say, Newt Gingrich that Mitt Romney is a timid Massachusetts moderate? Do you think that plays well in South Carolina?
Well, I try not to be anybody's strategist and try to be above the fray a little bit, but I think that our voters are particular in that we've got a good blend of the Republican base, and when our folks go out to these events, the questions that are raised, they're going to get asked in these small venues, and they're going to expect people to answer them, so I think you're going to see all that played out in the next 11 days.
So you're not seeing a foregone conclusion that Mitt Romney's won Iowa, won New Hampshire. You don't think it's a walk in South Carolina?
I really don't. I look at the polls, and I've watched this thing for all of my adult life, and I got to tell you, what's going to happen here is the winner's going to come from whoever comes, connects with our voters, gets to know them, and makes the best impression, and then develops that buzz out in the communities that carries them to victory. So I'm not too much on today's polls and yesterday's snapshot. There's no question Governor Romney's done a great job, and he's got an incredible campaign going. But I believe this is totally up in the air, and it's based on who does the best here in the next 11 days.
And some of those jobs that Newt Gingrich, for example, is talking about having been lost, Rick Perry's on this theme too, we're right there in your state of South Carolina. Does that come back to haunt Mitt Romney, do you think?
Well, I don't know if it comes back to haunt him or not. I think that the attacks that he's bringing up right now are certainly to be looked at by the Romney campaign. He's going to get those kind of questions, and he'll have to handle them. But part of our primary process, it's kind of a backyard brawl. Knuckles are bared, and the gloves are off, so to speak. But it is also part of the vetting process. I remember as a real young man watching Bush and Reagan, thinking after the voodoo economics comment by George Bush, the one, I didn't think they'd ever be friends, and yet he was the VP nominee too. So these things tend to sort themselves out, and we'll see what happens in the next 11 days here.
Okay. Chad Connolly, chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
And now a wrap-up of the candidates' speeches tonight. In their own words, the victor, Mitt Romney, looked past the Republican competition and set his sights on President Obama.
He wants to turn America into a European-style social welfare state. We want to ensure that we remain a free and prosperous land of opportunity. Yeah! This president takes his inspiration from the capitals of Europe. We look to the cities and towns across America for our inspiration. This president puts his faith in government. We put our faith in the American people.
Ron Paul told his supporters that his second place finish in New Hampshire amounts to a victory for the cause of liberty.
There is no doubt that this whole effort that we are involved in will not go unnoticed, let me tell you. I think the intellectual revolution that's going on now to restore liberty in this country is well on its way, and there's no way they're going to stop the momentum that we have started.
And from Ron Paul on to John Huntsman, who sounded more than pleased with his result.
I'd say third place is a ticket to ride, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, South Carolina.
Rick Santorum was less pleased with the outcome. He said New Hampshire was an uphill climb, but he said it was worth the effort.
We needed someone who was going to go out and speak for all Americans to be able to have the opportunities to rise in society. And we took that message here to New Hampshire. We took it talking about our manufacturing plan, talking about what we're going to do to grow this economy. And we took it to talk about faith and family as the bedrock of our society.
Newt Gingrich, battling Santorum for fourth place, asked his backers not to slow down.
I believe as we get to South Carolina, as the choice becomes clear, as people understand that there is a bold Reagan conservative approach of lower taxes, less regulations, more American energy, and actually being in favor of creating jobs, the opposite of the Obama program, I believe we can reach out and we can create a majority that will shock the country and a majority that will begin to put us back in the right track.
And we haven't heard from Texas Governor Rick Perry, who didn't campaign in New Hampshire and appears to be coming in sixth place with less than 1% of today's vote.
And final thoughts now from a few of our analysts and commentators. First, to NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving, in Manchester, New Hampshire. Ron, as you listen to excerpts from those speeches tonight, what strikes you the most?
What strikes me is Ron Paul's conviction. I think of all these candidates, he means exactly what he said tonight, and he means it to his core. I believe also his supporters do, but I just don't think they've found a way to break through that ceiling that always seems to loom just over his head.
And E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post, we heard there, John Onsman, hello, South Carolina, sounded like a little bit of a Howard Dean moment there. Your thoughts?
Without the shouting quite, I think Huntsman in the last 2 days of the campaign found a theme, national unity. It seems a niche product in the Republican primaries this year. They don't want to do business with President Obama. We'll see if that works in South Carolina. Mitt Romney's in a great position tonight, and we will see if attacks on him as a timid Massachusetts moderate vulture capitalist can upend him in South Carolina, a place that has upended people before. It is Rick Santorum's shot. I think he does have a shot there, and Ron Paul endures forever.
Matt Continetti of the Weekly Standard. We heard Congressman Tim Scott talking about sort of the message of fear and how that resonates with voters. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the thing that Republicans are most concerned about right now is defeating Barack Obama, and they want the most electable candidate. They think that's Mitt Romney. We saw that in Iowa. We see that in New Hampshire. And I think in the general election, assuming Romney is the nominee, it's going to come down to Obama's record versus Bain Capital. I think that's a contest Republicans win.
Okay. Matt Continetti, contributing editor with the Weekly Standard, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution. Thanks to you both. And thanks to Ron Elving in New Hampshire as we've continued our special coverage this evening. Robert?
Thanks to you, Melissa.
It's been fun. Let's review the results that we have. Right now, what, about 80% of the precincts reporting in New Hampshire? And the results been pretty consistent throughout the night. Mitt Romney on the top of the pack with 38% or so of the vote. Ron Paul in second, 23%. John Huntsman in third, 17%. Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum just about even, just a couple hundred votes apart at just under 10%, and Rick Perry not even hitting 1%.
That's it. South Carolina is next. Mitt Romney, the victor, both in New Hampshire and Iowa, the first non-incumbent Republican candidate to do that. And this has been special coverage of the New Hampshire primary of 2012 from NPR News.